Just a heads up, today's episode mentioned suicide. If you or someone that you know needs help, visit 988lifeline.org or call or text the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. Next, Benedict was a 16-year-old sophomore going to a school near Tulsa, Oklahoma. Next was non-binary and used they-them pronouns.
They liked video games. They had a cat named Zeus. They were an animal lover. They had friends and had told family members that they had been bullied at school.
Molly Hennessy Fisk is a national reporter for The Post. She says that, according to Nex Benedict's family, Nex was bullied at school because of their gender identity. And on February 7th, Nex got into a fight in a school bathroom.
We know from family accounts, from police accounts, and then some of the video that police have released, that Nex went into a bathroom with a friend, and then there were several other girls there. It was a girls' bathroom that they got into a fight with those girls that ended up becoming a physical fight.
So what happened today?
I got jumped.
Tell me about it. What happened?
They've been antagonizing.
After the fight, Nex went to the hospital and spoke with police. The officer's body cam captured their conversation.
We didn't know any. Okay. No, I don't know their names. I don't know.
Okay. So they just up and decided to just start messing with you.
Yeah, because of the way that we dressed.
Okay. So you didn't do anything at all at any point in time that would have, even a couple days ago or even a month ago or anything like that.
I don't know these girls.
Okay. All right. So they just continue to...
There's no mention made of being non-binary, whether there was any bullying related to that. There's just the question about, were you bullied? Did you tell anybody at the school about it?
When asked why they didn't report the bullying to school administrators, Nex said, quote, "I didn't really see the point in it." The next morning, Nex's grandmother, who's also Nex's guardian, was getting ready to go out.
It was breakfast time, and Nex had gone back to change clothes to go out with their grandmother, and they collapsed. And then the family called paramedics who came to the house, tried to revive Nex. Nex got taken to the hospital and had died.
Nex died on February 8th. A full autopsy hasn't been released yet, but a preliminary medical examiner's report has listed the cause of death as suicide. Nex's family is questioning that report. They cite the injuries that Nex received during the fight in the bathroom. Now, as multiple investigations continue into Nex's death, LGBTQ advocates are warning that what happened to Nex is not an isolated incident. There has been a wave of new legislation across the country targeting LGBTQ youth, and concerns are rising that the threats faced by young queer people are becoming more dire.
There's also an LGBTQ community in Oklahoma who are saying to me that there's a lot of bullying going on. There have been teen suicides at the high schools of LGBTQ teens whose family said they were bullied at other schools. So they see Nex's death as not an isolated incident and definitely related to bigger problems with bullying and attacks on the LGBTQ community in Oklahoma.
From the newsroom of The Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm Martine Powers, and it's Wednesday, March 20th. Today, what we know about the death of Nex Benedict, and what their story tells us about the experience of LGBTQ young people across the country. So, Molly, what are the biggest outstanding questions that have come up since Nex's death?
Well, certainly the biggest question is, what was the cause of death? Was it in any way related to the fight, to Nex's head being hit the day before, any kind of head trauma or injuries? There's also been some disputes between the family and the police in terms of the police saying this was not, Nex's death was not trauma related. And the family, when a portion of the autopsy report was recently released, where the police are saying that, and the the medical examiner saying that Nex's death was a suicide related to medications. The family responded by releasing more of the autopsy report, which they have seen, but that hasn't been publicly released by police, that that detailed a lot more of the traumatic injuries that Nex had suffered because of the fight. So head injuries, contusions, lacerations, things like that.
So this family is fighting for answers. I think anyone who hears about Nex's story understands why this feels so tragic for someone so young, clearly going through a hard time. So tell me more about the response to Nex's death, both in Oklahoma and across the country.
So in Owosso, where it happened, students staged a walkout at the school. Some students I talked to were afraid to even participate in the walkout. They drove by. A student I talked to has stopped going to school. They're staying home and doing their work from there because they're so nervous and concerned about the environment at the school. They said they have some teachers who are good and supportive, but they have others who are not, who are very conservative, and talking about politics in their classes and things, that they had been warned. They told me not to even mention Nex's name. But then there's other students who did go to the walkout and who felt like they did have the freedom to express their support for Nex. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag in Owosso. In Oklahoma, I was also at the state capitol last week where they had a protest in support of Nex, where dozens of people showed up and were marching. But there were a lot of people calling for justice for Nex and even having signs that said this was not a suicide.
Tell me about some of the conversations that you had with some of the other students from Owosso High School and what they had to say about all of this.
Well, it's interesting. I talked to a couple LGBTQ students, both students who are there now and a student who graduated last year, who said that, yes, there is bullying, not just of LGBTQ students, but they mentioned something that happened where a cisgender student had written an article about the LGBTQ Students Club, and then they got bullied or you know, targeted for even just writing a news story in the student paper about it. So they felt like while there were some supportive teachers and some supportive folks at the school, there definitely was that environment of people feeling targeted or that it wasn't a safe space necessarily. And there also was a school board meeting, the most recent school board meeting, where folks came and spoke during the public comment portion. These officials from the school district were defending themselves and saying we have these safety plans and we've worked to create a safe environment.
This heartbreaking situation serves as a reminder that we must continue our focus as outlined in our district strategic plan to create a safe and nurturing environment. As we move forward with our strategic plan.
But then you had parents like Susie Eubank talking about her child who's LGBTQ getting bullied at the school and saying that there's a problem there.
Nex could have been my child because y'all didn't do your job. You didn't do your job. You want to say you did your job, but you don't. Because until you come home and your kid's on the floor crying because he doesn't know what else to do because there's so many emotions because he can't even walk down the hallway without getting shoved or pushed because of all these bullies and y'all won't do anything about it.
And you had people even in the audience booing or cheering. So it's really divided the community.
It sounds like things are pretty heated at Owosso High School. But thinking more largely about Oklahoma, what is the cultural climate there when it comes to LGBTQ rights? And how is this sort of holding up a mirror to other conversations that are happening around that?
Well, I was looking at the ACLU has a tracker of legislation that's been proposed. And this year, Oklahoma legislators have already proposed more than 50 anti-LGBTQ laws, more than any other state. And that's just this year. And there were several that passed last year, for instance, restrictions on transgender youth receiving gender-affirming care. This year, there's been a bill proposed to ban pride flags or pride-related events, which is sort of similar to the Don't Say Gay legislation that passed in other states. I mean, there's a lot across the board that has been proposed or is in process at the legislature. It's very definitely a red state environment. And then the head of the schools of the Department of Education in Oklahoma, Ryan Walters, is an extremely right-wing figure who is unapologetic about saying that he does not accept transgender people, people identifying as transgender, pronouns, all of these things. So he has positioned himself nationally as this culture warrior and it has been, you know, technically overseeing the school's response to Nex's death.
So what is the next step in this case surrounding Nex's death? And what are the different ways that this story might play out?
Well, the big thing that we're all waiting for is the full autopsy to be released. That's expected to be released March 27th. So we're all waiting to see what the full autopsy says, especially since the family has said, look, you all are not getting the full picture here. The police are selectively releasing parts of this. You need to see everything in context. And I'm hoping to talk to some forensic experts once that gets released to interpret it and see, you know, could these injuries that Nex suffered, in particular the head trauma, have been related to their death? The other thing that we're waiting to see is what will come of the U.S. Department of Education's investigation into Owosso schools. A group called the Human Rights Campaign, an LGBTQ advocacy group nationally, had filed a complaint with the Department of Education's Civil Rights Office about discrimination and sex-based harassment related to Nex's death, and the Department of Education is still investigating that. So we're waiting to see what's going to come of that. And then that same group, HRC, has asked the Department of Justice Office of Civil Rights to investigate as well. And they haven't yet, but that could still happen. So we're just waiting to see.
Molly, thank you so much for sharing your reporting on this.
Thank you for having me.
Molly Hennessy-Fisk is a national reporter for The Post. After the break, I will be talking with another one of my colleagues here at The Post, education reporter Laura Meckler. She has been looking into the rising number of laws restricting LGBTQ youth nationwide and trying to figure out how that has changed the experiences of young people on the ground. We'll be right back.
In-laws. Love them or hate them, you're pretty much stuck with them. And when you're a ruler in the Middle Ages, that can be a serious problem. It might even land you dead. I'm Dan Jones, and on season 4 of This Is History, I'm telling the story of England's weirdest king, Henry III. He's in way over his head, and he's surrounded by bloodthirsty relatives with their eyes on his throne. To listen, search This Is History and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Laura, we just heard all about Nex Benedict and what has happened in the wake of their death. Laura, I'm hoping that you can give us a little bit more context about what LGBTQ young people are facing right now, not just in Oklahoma, but also around the country. And I know that you've been doing some digging into the data about bullying and hate crimes against LGBTQ people. So can you tell me a little bit about your reporting on this?
I'm so glad we're having this conversation in the context of the conversation you had with Molly about Nex, because that's really what inspired this story. We saw what happened there, and we got to thinking, you know, this is not the only situation, not the only case of bullying by any means. Everyone sort of knows that it's out there. So let's just take a deeper look. So we found data from a variety of places, but probably the most interesting thing that we found came from the FBI hate crime data. And what they do is they collect reports from local police of all sorts of crimes, including hate crimes. And you can narrow that data to look just at hate crimes directed at LGBTQ people and also just at school. We decided to sort of bifurcate it, and we looked at what the average number of hate crimes in these LGBTQ hate crimes at schools were between 2015 and 2019. So that's sort of the period right before the pandemic, right before the launch of the sort of culture war that we've been in around education for the last few years. So we compared the annual average in 2015 to 2019 to what we saw in 21-22.
So it was like this clear before period and then this more recent like after period.
Exactly. Because, you know, these numbers obviously do fluctuate year to year. So rather than look at it at any one single year, we decided to look at the annual averages so that we could try to just get a big bird's eye view of what was going on.
And what did you find from looking at that data?
The first thing that became immediately apparent is that there has just been a big rise. And if you look at K-12 campuses and you look at college campuses together, this rise has been, you know, more than doubled from an average of about 107 hate crimes a year to 233. So there was a big increase. But then we decided to refine that data and look at it a little more carefully and compare what was happening in the states where they've enacted some of these restrictive laws dealing with gay, lesbian, and transgender students and in the states where they haven't.
And why did you want to make that distinction?
Well, we just wanted to see, you know, is there any impact of these laws in either direction? Has there been a reaction? And obviously, you know, we're looking at correlations. We can't say for sure what causes any change in data, but we at least wanted to look to see, have the hate crimes increased more in the states where this has really been in the news and where there's really been a target on these kids?
And so when you kind of divided up the data that way, what did it tell you about whether there was like a difference in the amount of hate crimes that you see in states where you have this legislation that has targeted LGBTQ young people?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually kind of jaw-dropping because there was a clear difference. So we were comparing 28 states that have passed at least one of these laws with the 22 states that have not. And particularly when we looked at K-12 campuses, it was true for colleges too, but particularly in K-12 campuses, we saw a more than quadrupling of the number of hate crimes in those states that have those restrictive laws. Whereas in the states without the laws, it was about a doubling. So it just was a much bigger increase.
Hmm. And talk to me about what is exactly happening in these states where you saw that bigger increase.
Well, you know, these are places where this stuff has been front burner, right? I mean, this is a very partisan issue. This is all coming from the Republican Party. You know, it was, you know, Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, really drove it in the beginning. But if you think about the fact that we identified 28 states that had at least one of these laws, they've become very popular. That includes restrictions on transgender athletes, barring trans girls from competing on girls' sports teams. In some cases, restricting use of facilities like bathrooms or locker rooms. In some cases, it deals with the curriculum itself and circumscribing what teachers can talk about vis-a-vis gender identity, also sexual orientation, or in some cases, barring instruction, certainly in the younger grades of these subjects altogether. So I don't think that this is like the law passed and therefore it led to these kinds of consequences. I think if there is a connection, I think it's much more likely to be about the overall environment and the overall political discourse in the state.
Interesting that like the legislation is sort of a sign of the kind of temperature there and the general sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, it may be reflective of the temperature. It also may be driving the temperature up, you know, when you have legislators and governors who are pressing for these things and they're in the news. And, you know, what advocates will tell us, and now this is a point of view from an advocate, but what they say is that this is essentially giving a permission slip to people to bully or to go after these students. It's sort of the from the top levels of government. You know, also, I think it's important to note that even though we're seeing this rise, this is not a new thing. I think that any adult today who is gay and grew up with people knowing they were gay would tell you that they faced, you know, the same sort of thing. Like, this is not a new thing. LGBTQ youth have long faced, you know, harassment and bullying. So, you know, we're not trying to say that this is brand new. We're not trying to say this is the only reason why kids get bullied. There are lots of reasons for sure. But I think it's also important that we look like really clear-eyed, like when we do have data that indicates that there's something that's on the rise and that it's affecting a particular group of people. We thought that it was important to really shine a light on that.
So I understand that your story included the perspective of a transgender teenager from Virginia named Cardin, and that they kind of weighed in on how this has been affecting their life. Can you talk a little bit about what you heard from Cardin?
Yeah, Cardin and others, too, also just talked about how they feel like there's a connection between the political rhetoric. Now, Cardin is somebody who really experienced this sort of what I would think of as kind of your typical bullying, you know? This wasn't like to the point where it made the national news, you know? But twice last fall, a group of freshman boys at Cardin School really harassed him for his gender identity, once calling him queer in sort of a nasty tone. There was a kid who said that this pride flag he had tucked into his backpack was pitiful. And then when Cardin tried to reply, he basically said, just go die already. You know, just these, you know, these are may feel like small things, but of course, any of us who remembers what it was like to be in school and who were a victim of bullying for any reason, you know, we know that this can be really debilitating, or those of us who are parents know that how hard this can be when your kids go through this. And, you know, we've also heard some pretty extreme stories where kids are consider taking their own lives because they are so distraught by what's going on and feeling like they just don't want to be the person who they feel like they are. So this is serious stuff. You know, this isn't just like kids will be kids kind of things. I mean, maybe in some cases it is, but often it can be much more serious. And also I should say that we know about this not just from these anecdotes that we've heard from the people that we talked to, but we also talked to groups that help teens get through this sort of thing. So for instance, the Trevor Project, which provides support to LGBTQ youth, specifically aimed at suicide prevention, but other crisis intervention as well. So in the year ending July 2022, they had fielded about 230,000 crisis contacts. That's like phone calls, texts, online chats. And then the next year, so now we're in the year ending last summer, it had more than doubled to more than 500,000 of these contacts. And the same thing was true at the Rainbow Youth Project. They're a group that saw a huge spike in the number of calls that they were receiving. And they, in fact, tagged them for what was the reason that they were calling. And last year, the most common reason was political rhetoric.
Wow.
So we like to tell the stories of individual kids and how they're dealing with it, but we really know from this kind of information that this is not just, you know, not just anecdotal. This is, in fact, much broader.
You know, I think so many people listening to this are going to feel heartbroken to understand how much so many of these kids are dealing with and the ways in which they have been feeling attacked or targeted or harassed for who they are. I'm wondering, what kinds of things are schools and political leaders doing to protect queer kids from this kind of harassment and bullying?
Well, this definitely is an area that a lot of schools are worried about. There is a lot of concern around bullying, bullying in general. You know, just apropos, you know, last year I did a bunch of stories about homeschooling. And when we asked, we did a poll of homeschool parents and asked why they were homeschooling, a lot of them cited bullying. I mean, bullying is a very broad concern. So that, yes, there are statewide initiatives that are helping schools to focus on anti-bullying programs. There are district level programs, and there are school leaders who are taking this on as well. So I do think this is something that is of concern by school leaders, broadly speaking, for sure.
Well, considering the fact that you have seen this rise in these number of incidents, both in what, you know, places like the Trevor Project have noticed, what the FBI has been keeping record of, what are the questions that you're going to be asking going forward, and what will you be looking out for as you continue to cover this?
Well, you know, I think we have to look at this on multiple levels at the same time. You know, we want to see, does this legislative action continue? Do we continue to see more and more of this legislation passed, or are we at a high point now? We want to keep an eye on this to see how that unfolds from a legislative point of view. And we always have our eyes on how schools are responding. So that's an important part of this, too. And then, of course, the numbers. We have this FBI hate crime data. It's very useful. And we'll get another round in a year from now. And we'll see, you know, is it continuing to rise, or are we going to see it falling again?
Laura, thank you so much for sharing and explaining all this reporting. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Laura Meckler is a national education reporter for The Post. Before we go, we've got some news from other parts of the country. The state of Texas has been blocked from arresting and deporting migrants for now. For background, this is all about a law passed in Texas last year, SB 4. It made it a state crime for migrants to illegally cross the U.S.-Mexico border into Texas. On Tuesday, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that this law could take effect. But just hours later, a federal appeals court put the law on hold again. So this case is back in federal court, where judges will decide what's next. And in Ohio, results from Tuesday's primary are setting up a fierce matchup for what will be a closely watched race for one of Ohio's Senate seats. On the Republican side, Bernie Moreno won the nomination easily. Moreno is a wealthy former car dealer, a 2020 election denier, and he has the backing of Donald Trump. He will be going up against the Democratic incumbent Senator Sherrod Brown. This race is important because if the seat flips from blue to red, it could hand control of the U.S. Senate back to Republicans. If you're craving more on this story and others coming out of the primaries from Tuesday, definitely tune into our next installment of The Campaign Moment, our new weekly conversation about all things politics. The next episode comes out this Friday. Check back in this feed to take a listen. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. Today's show was produced by Peter Bresnan with help from Alana Gordon. It was mixed by Sean Carter and edited by Monica Campbell. I'm Martine Powers. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.